I am saddened to see you leave, mistress.
Aban spoke to Leisha a few days later as his wives packed up the last of the endless gifts Jardir had bestowed.
I will miss our conversations.
And miss having the Palace of Mirrors to hide the comeliest of your wives and daughters from the Dal Shaaram.
You've learned more of our tongue than you let on.
Why don't you just tell Aman? Let him discipline Haseek and the others. They can't just go around raping whomever they want.
Your pardon, mistress, but the law says they can.
Leisha opened her mouth to reply, but he held up a hand.
Aman's power is not as absolute as he thinks. Disciplining his own men over a Kafit's women would sow discord among the many trust to carry spears at his back.
And that's more important than the safety of your family?
Do not assume you understand all our ways after living among us for a few weeks. I will find a way to protect my family that doesn't threaten my master.
I'm sorry.
Repay me by letting me build a pavilion in your village. My family has one with every tribe to trade in goods and livestock. Evrim's bounty has more grain than it needs, and I know there are hungry mouths to the north.
That's kind of you.
It is not, as you will see when my wives haggle with your people for the first time.
Aban limped over to the window and looked down into the courtyard.
Your escort is ready. Come, and I will see you down.
What happened between Aman and the Parchin, Aban? Why did Aman seem angry when you mentioned him to me? Why were you afraid when I told you I mentioned him to Aman?
If I will not put my master at risk for the sake of my family, what makes you think I will do it for the Parchin?
Answering my question puts Jardir at no risk, I swear.
Perhaps it does, and perhaps not.
I don't understand this. You both claim Arlen was your friend.
He was, my mistress. And because it is so, I will tell you this much. If you know the son of Jeff, if you can get word to him, tell him to run to the end of the world and beyond, because that is how far Jardir will go to kill him.
But why?
Because there can only be one deliverer, and the Parchin and Aman have disagreed before as to who it should be.
Aban went right to Jardir's throne room from the Palace of Mirrors. The moment Jardir saw the Kafit, he dismissed his advisors, leaving the two men alone.
She has left?
Mistress Leisha has agreed to allow me to set up a trading post for the Hollow tribe. It will help facilitate their integration and give us valuable contacts in the north.
Well done.
I will need men to guard the shipments and the stores at the post. Before, I had servants for such heavy duty. Kafit, perhaps, but fit men.
Such men are all Dal Shaaram now.
You see my difficulty. No Dal Shaaram will take orders from Kafit in any event. But if you would allow me to select a few Dal Shaaram to serve me in this regard, it would be most satisfactory.
How many?
I could make do with 100, a pittance.
No warrior, even a Dal Shaaram, is a pittance, Aban.
I will pay their family stipends from my own coffers, of course.
Pick your 100.
Will your promises to the mistresses of the Hollow Tribe alter your plans?
My promises affect nothing. It is still my duty to unite the people of the Northland for Sharakah. We will march on Lacton in the spring.
Why all these rafts if there's a perfectly good bridge?
Renna gestured toward the nameless collection of huts, too few to even be called a hamlet. Each tiny structure had a raft out by the water, surrounded by wards staked into the banks of the dividing. A few demons prowled the area, testing the wards on the huts, but Renna was wrapped in her warded cloak, and Arlen radiated such power that the occasional hiss and eye contact were enough to keep the Korlings back from him as they walked along the riverbank.
Merchants who don't want the bridge guards rooting through their goods sometimes pay wrathmen to take them across the dividing, usually because they're carrying something or someone they shouldn't.
So we can hire one?
Could, but that would mean waiting until dawn and dealing with more rumors. Can't swing my arm in these parts without hitting someone who acts the fool because they think I'm the deliverer.
Don't know you like I do.
There.
Arlen pointed to a raft big enough to carry Twilight Dancer comfortably. There was a great groove in the riverbank where it was hauled up and down each day. He handed Renna one of his ancient gold coins.
Here, go and leave this by the door.
Why? It's new moon. He ain't gonna see us take it, and even if he hears, he sure as the sun ain't gonna cross his wards to run after us.
We ain't thieves, Ren. Smuggler or no, someone earns their keep with this raft.
Renna nodded and took the coin, leaving it on the hut's doorstep. Arlen examined the raft.
Not even a ripping water ward.
Renna returned, kicking at one of the stakes.
These ain't worth spit either. Dumb luck much as anything protecting these rafts.
I can't explain it, Ren. Any 10-year-old in the brook can outward most folk in the free cities, where they've been raised not to trust anyone without a guild license to ward a ripping windowsill.
Can you ward it now?
Not so's it'll dry before dawn.
Renna looked out at the wide expanse of water. Even with her warded eyes, she couldn't see the far side.
What happens we try to cross without wards?
There's usually froggies that hide right at the bank.
We kill those first?
It's a new moon. No light to shine on the raft from above and point us out to the river demon, so odds are we'll get across the deep water safe. By the time we reach the far bank, the sky will be lighter and most of the froggies will have gone back to the core.
Froggies?
Bank demons. Folk call them froggies because they look like big fly frogs, except they're big enough to eat you like a fly. They jump out of the water and catch you with their tongues, swallowing you as they drag you in. You put up too much of a fight, and they just dive into the river to drown it out of you.
So what's the best way to kill one?
With a spear.
Arlen took two and handed her one.
Here, watch.
He moved slowly toward the water's edge. For a moment, all seemed calm. And then the water by the bank exploded as a giant, wide-mouthed corling sprang out. It gripped two stubby, webbed feet on the bank and snapped its head, shooting its thick, slimy tongue at him. But Arlen was ready and stepped easily to the side. The demon leapt fully onto the bank, covering some 10 feet in a single hop. It shot its tongue at him again, but again Arlen sidestepped, this time charging in close before the tongue could retract. With a quick, precise thrust, he put his spear through the folds of tough skin at its chin and up into its brain.
Trick is, you take them up on shore. You dodge the first tongue and they hop out of the water to try again. They're good jumpers, but their forelegs ain't got the reach of a spear. You can stab from a safe distance.
Not much fun in that.
Hey, what's going on out there?
Lamplight flickered in one of the hut's windows, roused by the commotion.
It's time to go.
The one was on the move. The Corling Prince immediately leapt upon its mimic's back and took to the sky, following his trail. It had been a risk, letting the human live another cycle, but one the Mind Demon had deemed acceptable in hope that it might learn how the One had come into powers long since stamped away. The One killed drones nightly, but their number was insignificant, as were the weapons he spread. He was not a unifier like the dangerous one to the south, but it was in his power to be. If he but called, human drones would flock to him, and if that happened, they could threaten the hive. And now he was moving with great decision back toward the human breeding grounds. The Corling Prince was certain he would call to the human drones then, and a unification would begin. That could not be tolerated. The Mind Demon spent the remainder of the first night tracking the One. Just before the dawn, it reached the river, and its prey came into sight. Nothing could be done now with the sun about to rise, but it would find them quickly the next night. The mimic dropped lightly to the riverbank, bending low so the Corling Prince could dismount. As they began to dematerialize, the mimic sensed its master's anticipation for the kill. Renna and Arlen kept riding when the sun rose, passing a branch in the road with an old signpost a few hours later.
And stopping in the town?
You can read?
Of course not. Don't need to read to know what a sign on the road is for.
Point. Ain't got time to waste with other towns right now. I need to get to the Hollow quick.
Why?
Friend's got herself into a fix, and I reckon it's more than a little my fault for staying away so long.
What friend? Who is she?
Leisha Paper, herb gatherer of Deliverous Hollow.
Oh, is she pretty?
Why does it feel like we're 10 summers old?
Because I'm not one of these folks sees you as the deliverer. They didn't see the look on your face after you clicked teeth with Benny in the hayloft.
Your kiss was better.
Renna tightened her arms around his waist, but he shifted uncomfortably.
We'll cut off the road soon. Too many folk on it these days. There's a path I know will take us to one of my caches for fresh weapons and supplies. From there we can ford the Angers River and be in the Hollow in a couple nights.
Sounds good.
Renna dozed in the saddle for a time until Arlen gently shook her awake.
Best dismount and put your cloak on. It's getting dark, and we have a few hours left to go before we get to my cache.
Renna nodded, and he pulled the horse up. They were in a sparsely wooded area with tall conifer trees spaced widely enough that they could walk on either side of Twilight Dancer. She dropped from the saddle and reached into her satchel, drawing forth the warded cloak.
Hate wearing this thing.
I don't care what you hate. Corlings are thicker on this side of the Dividing. More towns and ruins to draw them. Treetops around here get rife with woody swinging from branch to branch and dropping on you from above.
As the shadows grew, Renna watched the mist rise slowly through the detritus of needle and cone carpeting the ground between the trees. It curled around the tree trunks like smoke rising up a chimney.
What are they doing?
Some like to materialize up in the trees, out of sight so you don't see them coming. They usually wait till you pass, then drop on your back. There's one up ahead. Watch close.
Arlen let her take Twilight Dancer's lead and walked a few feet ahead of them.
Ain't you gonna take your robe off?
Gonna show you a trick. Don't even need your warded skin, you do it right.
Renna nodded, watching intently. They walked a bit farther, and then, as predicted, a bark-skinned demon fell from the trees toward Arlen's back. But Arlen was ready. He twisted and ducked his head under one of the falling demon's armpits, putting his free arm around the Corling's neck from behind, grasping it under the snout. With a sharp pivot, he turned, letting the force of the demon's own fore break its neck.
Sweet day!
There's several ways to do it, but the principle's the same for all. Sharasok is about using their power against them, like wards do. It's how the Krazen survived these last centuries, fighting Alagashrak every night.
They're so good at killing demons. Why do you hate him so?
I don't hate the Krazens. Not all of them, anyway. But their way of life, making slaves of everyone who ain't a man and a warrior, it ain't right. Especially not forced on Thesans at the end of a spear.
What are Thesans?
We are. All the free cities. And I mean for him to stay free.
The one had traveled far while the Corling Prince waited out the day in the core, but the mimic was swift, and it wasn't long before the Mind Demon caught sight of its prey, walking his mount through a sparse copse of trees. The Mind Demon circled above, watching as wood drones attacked the human. The one killed these with quick efficiency, hardly slowing his pace. The Mind Demon's cranium throbbed, and the mimic banked to the side and dove into the trees. Its wings melting away as it took the form of a giant wood demon. It caught a thick tree branch before they had fallen far, smoothly pulling out of the fall and into a forward motion. It swung easily from branch to branch, still carrying its mind. They came to a stop at a high vantage, watching the one approach. There was no sign of the female, though the mind demon could not recall her trail ending. It tasted her in the air. She had been about, and recently, but it could not sense her now. Pity. She would have been a useful tool against the one, and her mind was deliciously empty, yet flavored with powerful rage. A meal worth tracking after the one's mind had been similarly consumed.
There's another woody ahead.
It was larger than most, almost too big for the tree branches to support, closer to a rock demon.
Can I try this one?
The warded man shook his head. He glanced back at her, but it took him a moment to find her. The warded cloak still made him dizzy, and it was easy for his eyes to slide right off it without seeing, if his mind was not focused.
You need to sleep when we get to the cache, and you won't if you're all charged with magic.
What about you?
I got warding to do tonight. I'll sleep when we're back in the hollow.
The wood demon didn't wait for them to pass, picking up momentum and launching itself at him from the front. It was an unexpected move, but the warded man still had plenty of time to duck, reaching out for its lead talent to twist and turn its own force against it. He must have misjudged the length of the demon's limbs, though, because he somehow missed its clawed foot, which grabbed at his robed leg and pulled him from his feet. They both hit the ground heavily, and the Corling rolled away, rising on equal footing with him. They faced off, and immediately the warded man knew something was different about this demon. It circled him patiently, waiting for opportunity. A few times, the warded man lowered his eyes or seemed to turn away, inviting attack, but the Corling didn't take the bait, watching him intently.
This is a smart one.
Need help?
Be a cold day in the core when I need help killing a lone wood demon.
Arlen reached down to open his robe. The Corling launched itself at him before he could untie the garment, tackling him to the ground. The warded man fell in his back and kicked at it, delivering a blow greater than even Twilight Dancer could have done. The demon's arms became the tentacles of a lake demon, wrapping tightly around him. They dug in with a sharp horned surface, even as suckers latched onto his robe, holding it tight and keeping his wards covered. The demon's maw grew before his eyes, becoming like a bank demon's, large enough to swallow his entire head and shoulders. The warded man snapped his head forward, butting the demon's lower jaw with the impact ward atop his head. A few of the demon's teeth shattered, but there were hundreds more, and it did not let go its grip.
Twilight Dancer!
Twilight Dancer tossed its mighty head, yanking the lead away from Retta, and charged in, horns lowered. They tore through the demon's shoulder. The coiling melted away from Twilight Dancer's horns and grew again, its armor shifting and changing color as it became a rock demon. It swiped a backhand blow at the stallion. Even without its barding and saddlebags, Twilight Dancer weighed nearly a ton, but the powerful demon still sent the horse flying. He struck a tall tree.
Dancer!
The warded man tore the robe from his body and launched himself at the demon. The warded man's blows rocked the coiling back and it gave ground freely under the assault. But the wound Twilight Dancer's horns inflicted was already healed, and the warded man's punches and kicks seemed to have no lasting effect. His flesh pulsed around the scorched impact points, healing them instantly. He knocked the demon down on one arm, but it dug its great talons into the ground, throwing an enormous clump of dirt and wet leaves at him. The warded man had no chance to dodge and was struck full on. He recovered his feet quickly, brushing the filth from him, but he knew his wards were weakened where it clung to him, if they still worked at all. One of the demon's arms became half a dozen tentacles, each 10 feet long and ending in a sharp horn.
Knight, what part of the core did you come from?
The mimic lashed out with the new limbs. The warded man dodged to the side, rolling and coming up at a run to get inside the demon's reach. There was a gap in the armor plates at its armpit, and he drove his stiffened fingers, painted with piercing wounds, into the crevice. The coiling twisted, and its flesh dissolved around his hand. It was only then, when he was in contact with the demon as it changed, that he realized what it was doing. It was dematerializing and reforming, the same way he did, or any coiling for that matter. This demon could simply reform in different ways. 1,000 possibilities opened to the warded man at the realization, too many even to consider. He brushed the epiphany aside like an irritating fly. In the split second when the demon was in transition, the warded man dematerialized as well, intermingling with it slightly to keep it from solidifying. He fought another demon this way once before, and knew that in this state strength and wards were meaningless. It was will that was power here, and the warded man knew his will was greater than any demon's. He locked on to the mimic demon's very molecules, keeping them scattered and immaterial, shepherded by his will. He sensed the creature's sudden fear and returned it with his anger and rage, dominating its will the way a parent would a disobedient toddler. But just as he felt the mimic's will breaking, another will touched him, this one 1,000 times stronger. The coiling prince touched his mind. Wards had no power in the between state. Any hatchling prince knew that. The one had foolishly made himself vulnerable. The mind demon lashed out before the human could recover from his surprise, and then, at last, it knew its foe, diving into the river of his memories. The human was horrified at the invasion, but helpless to stop it. His impotent rage was intoxicating. Then, the one surprised him again. A lesser being would have faltered, but the human left his memories behind, unguarded, and threw his will at the mind demon's own river, the essence of its being. He burst through the mind demon's defenses, unprepared for such ferocity, and they linked for just a moment before the coiling prince managed to gather its will and sever the connection. The moment his mind was free, the one solidified, forcing the mimic to do the same.
Retta!
The coiling prince looked in shock to see the air ripple and the human female appear as if from nothing, stabbing the mimic with her warded knife. The mind demon studied the distortion in the air about the female, a garment trailing behind her as she struck, powerful warding to have hidden her from even a prince's eyes. The moment the one solidified, his mental wards returned, but he also lost his control over the mimic. The mind demon had its servant shove him back, then throw itself upon the female, rending the warded garment from her and knocking her to the ground in a tumble. By the time the one came to his feet, two females squared off before him, identical in appearance and action. The mind demon linked their thoughts so that the mimic could mirror her utterly, then let go the claws that held it to the trunk of the tree. It stepped out into the open and drifted to the ground as gently as a falling leaf. The warded man blinked, seeing two Rena Tanners before him, identical down to the black stem stains on her skin in varying degrees of fading. They looked at him with the same eyes, wore the same ragged clothes, carried the same knife. Even the magic they radiated seemed the same. He ran to Twilight Dancer's side, forcing himself to ignore the horse's labored breaths as he snatched up his great bow and fitted an arrow. He wavered, unsure who to point it at.
Arlen, she's the demon!
Both Rennas pointed to the other. They looked at each other in shock and then turned back to him.
Arlen Bales, don't you tell me you can't pick me from a coraling!
The warded man looked at both of them and shrugged apologetically. Two sets of identical brown eyes glared at him.
Why'd I have to play Kissy that night?
You lost at sucker!
How'd I lose?
Betty cheated?
A murderous gleam came into both their eyes, and they turned to each other once more, raising their knives.
Don't! Give me a moment!
Course, Spawn, just let me kill the ripping thing I have done!
You ain't a match for it, Ren. Real Renna would mind me.
The women now moved to attack each other. The warded man nodded.
You might as well come out! I know you're there! That changing demon ain't smart enough for this!
A demon appeared. It was small and slender, with an oversized head and a high, knobbed cranium. Its eyes were huge black pools, and it bared only a single row of sharp teeth at him. The talons at the end of its delicate fingers were like an Angerian lady's painted nails.
Been wondering when I'd run into one of you bastards.
Arlen tapped the large ward tattooed in the center of his forehead.
Warded myself up special for it.
The demon tilted its head, studying him. Beside him, the two Rennas stiffened slightly.
Your mind may be shielded, but this female is not. We can kill her at will.
The demon traced a quick ward in the air, and there was a flash of magic that reduced the arrow to ashes before it struck home.
What do you want?
What does your steed want from the insects its tail swats? You are an annoyance to be crushed, nothing more.
Come try.
In time, you have no drones to defend you while I have many. Soon I'll lay open your skull and consume your mind. But it amuses me to let you bargain for the female first.
You said I had nothing you want.
You don't. But giving up something you wish to keep hidden will cause you pain, and that will sweeten the meal we will make of your mind. Where did you learn of us?
Why should I tell you? You can't pull it from my head, and she doesn't know.
You humans are weak about your females. It is a failing bred carefully into your ancestors. Tell us or she dies.
As they spoke, both women lifted identical warded knives and stepped close, holding them to each other's throats.
I could shoot one. Got half a chance of killing your changeling.
It's only a drone. The female, however, holds great meaning to you. You will suffer much if she dies.
The Rennas frowned.
Great meaning?
The warded man turned to look at them fully. There was fear in their eyes and despair.
I'm sorry, Ren. Didn't mean for this, but I warned you.
I know. It's your fault.
Ain't gonna be able to save you this time, Ren. Not even if I knew which one was you. So you're gonna have to be strong and save yourself. Cause that monster's the face of evil, and I ain't gonna let it get away.
The mind demon stiffened as it realized what he meant, but it was a second too late as the warded man dropped his bow and leapt at it, covering the distance between them in an instant. Before it could command Renna and the mimic to kill each other, his warded fist struck the quarreling prince's bulbous head with an explosion of magic. The slender demon was thrown several feet by the force of the blow and landed on its back. Its cranium throbbed, and the warded man could feel the thrum of power it sent out, though it did no harm to him. Leaping at the mind demon again, he pinned it. Each wound healed instantly, but he did not let up, keeping it stunned until he could find a way to kill it. If it dematerialized, he was prepared now to match wills against it. But the Mind Demon stayed solid, perhaps fearing just such a thing. With each blow, it grew more dazed, taking a split second longer to recover. The warded man slipped around the demon into a Sharasak chokehold, the pressure wards on his forearms growing warm as they flared against its throat, building power. It would be over in seconds, but then a wind demon crashed into him. The warded man rolled atop the wind demon and struck it hard in the throat, stunning it. But a wood demon swung down at him from the trees before he could finish it off. It was followed quickly by several more. The human flung the wood drones from its path, charging the Corling Prince again, but this time it was ready, drawing a ward that sent a blast of air to strike the one like a physical blow. By the time he rose, he was surrounded again by wood drones. At the Mind Demon's command, they broke branches from the trees to use as weapons, circumventing even the muddied wards of forbiddance on the human skin. The mimicking of her words and actions was horrifying enough, but Rena was truly revulsed when the Mind Demon rose up to take control of her voice and she realized it had been hiding within her all along, like a stowaway suddenly taking control of the cart. It was an unspeakable violation, worse than anything Harl had ever done to her, worse than the outhouse, worse than being staked at night. She could feel the demon burrowing through her thoughts like a field vole, taking her most cherished and private memories to use as weapons against Arlen. The thought filled her with rage, and she sensed the Mind Demon's pleasure at the response.
I've taken you before, many times.
Rena looked at Arlen and despaired at the resignation in his eyes. She had thought she was strong enough to walk his path, that she could do anything he could, but now that lie was proven. All she could do was get him killed. She tried to raise her knife to bury it in her own throat, but the Mind Demon controlled her body like a jungler's puppet, and she could not act against its will. Even if Arlen guessed right and somehow managed to kill the mimic, the Mind Demon could make her stab him in the heart just as easily. She wanted to warn him, but the words would not come. But then, the look in Arlen's eyes changed, as if he had come to some decision, and he gazed at her with a trust no one had ever shown her before.
You're gonna have to be strong enough to save yourself, because that monster's the face of evil, and I ain't gonna let it get away.
Her fear fell away at that look, and her eyes hardened. She nodded and felt the Mind Demon's sudden start, taking Arlen's meaning the same moment she did. It tried to react, but it was not quick enough as Arlen struck a blow to its head that lit the darkness with magic. The demon's presence in her mind vanished, leaving Rena stunned and disoriented. She glanced at the mimic, still in her form, and saw it stagger similarly, cut off from its mind. Tightening her grip on her father's knife, Rena leapt at the creature, putting the blade into its bare midriff. She put her free arm around the demon, pulling it in close as the black stem wards on her skin activated. Magic shocked through her muscles, filling her with strength as she heaved the knife upward, opening up the creature from navel to collar. The mimic's body may have looked like her on the outside, but the black, stinking ichor that burst from the wound was nothing from the surface world. She looked at its face, the same face she had seen 1,000 times in the surface of water. Rena was almost brought to tears by the pain and confusion in her own eyes, but then the face snarled like a dog and its teeth began to elongate as it hissed at her. Rena twisted as the mimic lunged. She grabbed its thick braid in her free hand as it passed, pulling it up short from its fall and baring its nape. The move gave such power to her pivot and slash that her knife passed through its neck effortlessly. Just like that, the fight was over. The demon's body fell to the ground lifelessly, and she was left holding her own head by the hair, eyes rolled back and black ichor dripping from the neck. The warded man felt his ribs snap as the branch struck him to the ground. Before he could recover, another branch struck him. He rolled to dodge the third and the fourth, but he could not regain his footing to rise, and the fifth struck him full in the face, tearing skin and popping one of his eyes from its socket to hang from a string of muscle. With his one good eye, he looked up, seeing several demons swinging branches at once. For a moment, he thought it was his time to die. But then his senses returned for a split second, and he cursed himself for a fool. As the branches came down, they struck only mist. The warded man slipped from the center of the copse, reforming behind one of the wood demons. His wounds healed instantly. He kicked out one of the demon's legs, grabbing it by the horns as it fell and using its own weight to flip it over and break its neck. He leapt at the next demon, putting his thumbs through its eyes. A third demon swung its branch at him, but again he dematerialized and it struck only its blind brother. The warded man solidified again, stabbing his stiffened fingers through a crevice in the attacking demon's bark-like armor. He had known no mortal weapon could harm him if he saw its approach, but now he realized it was much more than that. Anything short of death or dismemberment could be healed in an instant. The coilings around him had become nothing but flies to swat from his path. They weren't smart enough to dematerialize offensively on their own, and the mind demon would be wary to do it through them, lest it meet his will on that other plane. He ignored the remaining wood demons, passing through them like a ghost, and only solidifying when the path to the coiling prince was clear. He looked at the demon, and a wave of dizziness overcame him. The confidence that had suffused him a moment earlier vanished as he realized he was only just discovering the powers the demon had known for thousands of years. It bared its fangs and lifted a talon to draw a ward in the air. But then the tip of a blade burst from its chest, flaring bright with magic. The dizziness left him as Rena's cloak fell away, and he saw her holding the demon around the throat with her free arm, while the contact wards along her blade built in power. The warded man did not hesitate, leaping forward to strike hard blows to keep it off balance. The wards flared and the mind demon opened its mouth as if to scream, but no sound came out. Instead, its cranium pulsed, and the resulting thrum struck the warded man like a harsh wind, knocking him back. Rena seemed not to notice the effect, but all through the trees and seemingly for miles around, demons shrieked in agony. A wind demon dropped from the sky, crashing through the branches of a tree to hit the leaf bed dead. The wood demons that had attacked him likewise collapsed, killed by the demon's psychic scream, and in that instant the mind demon fled. The warded man whirled back to see the mind demon melt away from her grasp, breaking into mist that fled down a nearby path to the core. Instinctively, he followed. The path to the core was like following a brook upstream in the dark. He could feel the path, but sight had no meaning on the path to the core. He simply felt the flow of magic stemming from the center of the world and followed back against the current. The warded man kept his will focused on the evil taint of the coiling prince ahead of him, and it seemed they raced for miles before he drew close enough to grab at the demon. He had no hands with which to grab, but he willed his essence to latch onto the demon, and like two men blowing smoke into the same cloud, they mingled and their wills clashed. The warded man had expected the demon's will to have weakened, but it was no less potent now, and they clawed through each other's minds, jabbing fingers into any delicate crevice they could find. The coiling prince laid bare all his life's failures, mocking him with the fate he had abandoned Rena to, or brought upon the Rhizonians, teasing him with images of Jardir forcing himself upon poor, innocent Leisha. It was almost too much, but in his pain he lashed out, cracking through the mind demon's own defenses. He saw in that moment a glimpse of the core, a place of eternal darkness but lit with magic's glow more brightly than the desert wastes. Instantly, the demon's will retreated, ceasing its attack to protect its own thoughts. The warded man sensed the advantage and pressed his assault. He learned of the hive. The warded man might have won then, if not for the horror of the sight. The corelings that came to the surface to hunt were but the barest fraction of what the core could spew forth. Millions of demons, billions! For the first time since he had found the wards of old, he despaired that they could ever be defeated. The mind demon's will roared over him, and their struggle fell to a more basic level, the simple will to survive. But here the warded man held the advantage, for he had no fear of death, and did not look over his shoulder as it approached them both. The demon did. And in that instant, its will broke, and the warded man absorbed its magic into his own essence, leaving a burnt remain he threw from the path to the core to scatter away forever. Alone on the path, the warded man could finally hear the true call of the core, and it was beautiful. There was power there, power not evil in itself. Like fire, it was beyond good or evil. It was simply power, and it beckoned him like a teat to a hungry infant. He reached for it, ready to taste.
Orlin! Orlin, baby!
Arlen Bales. A name he hadn't used in years. Arlen Bales had died out in the Krasian desert. The voice was calling a ghost. He turned back to the core, ready to embrace it.
Don't you leave me again, Arlen Bales!
Rena!
He'd left her in dire straits twice now, but the third would be the deepest cut, damning her to the very life he sought to escape after she had worked so hard to save his. What could the embrace of the core offer that hers could not? Rena's throat was hoarse from screaming when the mist seeped back up from the ground and began to take Arlen's form. It seemed only a moment ago that he was as good as Cord, and she expecting no better. But now, suddenly, every demon in the area was dead, the night hauntingly quiet as she and Arlen stared at each other. The mind demon's magic feedback had been intense, and Rena's senses felt more alive than they ever had in her life. She practically crackled with energy, and her heart was pounding like a jungler's hand drums. Arlen glowed so intensely, he hurt to look at.
Dancer!
Arlen ran to his horse.
Broke a lot of bones. Ain't never gonna run again, even if he makes it through. Dad would say to put him down.
To the core with anything your dad would have done.
Rena felt his pain like a slap in the face and knew in that moment how much he loved the horse. She knew what it was like when an animal was your only friend in the world. She wished he could love her half so much.
Wounds have stopped bleeding. Must have taken some magic off that changing demon before he was struck.
Mimic. They're called mimics.
How do you know?
Learned a lot when I touched the Corling Prince's mind.
Arlen reached out, gripping one of the stallion's broken legs, and pulled the bones straight. Holding them in place with one powerful hand, he drew a ward in the air with the other. The ward flared and the bones knit before her eyes. One by one, Arlen tended the horse's wounds. But as Twilight Dancer began to breathe comfortably, Arlen began to weaken. His magic, so bright a moment ago, was dimming rapidly. Already it was darker than she had ever seen it. She touched his shoulder and felt a flash of pain as some of her own magic flowed into him.
Enough!
The warded man looked at Rena and felt a profound sense of guilt.
I'm sorry, Ren.
Sorry? For what?
I turned my back on you once when we were young, leaving you to Harl so I could chase demons. And then tonight, I did it again.
Felt that demon in my head. Felt it slither into me worse than Dad ever could. It was pure evil straight from the core. Killing that monster was worth more than 1,000 Rena Tanners.
The warded man reached out and touched her cheek, his eyes unreadable.
I thought so before, but now I ain't so sure.
I ain't taking back my promise. If this is your life, then I am to support it like a proper wife should. No matter what.
Dawn was approaching, and the core called to the warded man still. But it was a distant thing now, easily ignored. Because of her. Because with Rena, he finally remembered who he was. The words came easily to him.
I, Arlen Bales, promise myself to you, Rena Tanner.
The Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear, Part 3, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, Peter V. Brett. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the author. Production copyright 2012 by The Cutting Corporation, Incorporated. All rights reserved. With performances by Thomas Penny, Colleen Delaney, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Kimberly Gilbert, Alyssa Wilmoth, Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Nick DePinto, MJ Casey, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Johan Detweiler, Christopher Graybill, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Aselford, Ren Casey, Katie Karka, Nanette Savard, Karen Novak, Thomas Keegan, Daniel Sontag, Patrick Bussink, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Drew Copus, Alexander Strain, and Mort Shelby. Adapted and directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Demon Cycle, be sure to look for Brent Week's Night Angel trilogy and Brandon Sanderson's Elantris and Warbreaker. Available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other exciting graphic audio material.
Mr. Cotton.
Oh, it's a bullseye. They changed my name to Target. You call me Target.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens.
Holy cats, that blonde walked in. And I plumb stopped whatever I was doing right then and there. And I went weak at the knees.
Here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna write me a deed that says that Armand Argo or his heirs owns the Fair Tuesday. Then you're gonna write the same thing for every other claim that Scruples took over.
He'd kill me!
Then get out of town or start writing now. Because if you don't, you won't have any fingers left. And that's just the beginning of the part you'll lose.
How you doing, big fella?
Why are you here?
To see you, Cotton. I couldn't get you out of my head.
People must learn to abide by their agreements. Poor dear decided not to fulfill her obligations. Just like you.
So what? I quit you.
Stand back!
You son of a...
Get off, Arnold.
I'll kill myself if you're too chicken.
Well, it ain't a matter of chicken. It's getting it right. You can't go making mistakes in the killing business.
Well, I wouldn't mind a mistake or two if I get to keep my gold mine.
That's the last time you pull one on me!
There's something you should know. Billy Blue was dragged into the alley behind the mint and killed. There's not much we can do against an army of killers except lay low for the moment.
He offered me a deal. My life if I snitch on you, death if I don't, torture and death if I tell you about it.
Cotton Pickens, Book 2, 6 Ways from Sunday.
Available now in graphic audio.
All hail Jill Kismet, the great pretender.
Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crow's Jill Kismet.
They'll come for me, here or wherever I am, before dawn tomorrow. Meeting on the bridge is just a ploy. There's another game being played here, and I want to find out what it is before it gets any deeper. Or another hellbreed comes through to wipe my city off the map.
Book 5. Heaven's Spite.
And if it...
If it doesn't work, Anya, you will have to hunt me down. No pity, no mercy, no nothing. Kill me before I'm a danger to my city. Kill Perry, too. Burn him. Scatter the ashes as far as you can. Clear?
I got a knee, Ken.
And wrestled him down as he twisted. Then he shot me. He shot me 4 times. I'm going to take care of it.
How the hell are you going to do that?
I've been playing Perry for years now.
If you didn't even know that he...
No matter what I knew or know or should have known, Mikhail's dead and my city's in danger. My best bet is getting that fucking hellbreed to a place where I can deal with him. With you and the Wares getting those evocation sites shut down, I have a chance of getting Saul out of this alive and my city another few days of rolling along.
Jill, you can't...
Do it, Anya. Now! I cut, the blade sliding in with little resistance.
Yahoo!
I sheared through whatever served him as stomach muscle. I finished with a twist. And brought my knee up. I heaved him away.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.